Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Johns Hopkins Medicine. You find out more at www.hopkinsmedicine.org. We're talking about the construction of a new facility, a juvenile detention facility, in Baltimore. We had a program about this just a few weeks back, and we've been covering it a lot because it's a huge debate in our neighborhoods and in our communities all around the state of Maryland. And this week, it was a bidders conference, I think it was called, to learn how to bid on this new facility that's going to be constructed for $140 million, I think, right?
104.
And it was a four, just had it transposed. $104 million. And there's a lot of argument to this because we have a real problem at the Baltimore City Detention Center with juveniles being charged as adults, being housed with adults, and a lot of problems with that. And also the state not wanting those juveniles housed with other juveniles who are already in the new juvenile facility because many of these young people are charged with very serious crimes. And so the question is, do we need to build a new jail? Clearly something we can't keep using the old facilities. The old facilities, whether you're an adult or a kid, are barbaric at best and Dickensian at worst. So what is the state to do and what are we to do? And as I've said many times for the last 17 years, we've been covering the subject with every administration that ever has won the election in the state of Maryland to run the Department of Juvenile Services and Corrections. And nobody has really been able to turn this ship of corrections around for some reason to real reform, though we should add that I think of all the administrations I have questioned and prodded and pushed and pulled over the last 17 years, Martin O'Malley's administration has gone further than any other administration in trying to correct the problems in juvenile services. Having said that, we're going to launch this discussion again. And if you hear the names and think it's lopsided one way instead of the others, because it is really very difficult to find a lot of people willing to come on to defend the building of the jail. And we really have tried. But we are joined once again, and we appreciate her doing this for us all the time, Kristen Mahoney, who is Executive Director of the Maryland Governor's Office of Crime Control and Prevention. Kristen, thank you once again for agreeing to be with us.
Thank you.
We are joined also on the phone by Sean Tarrant, a Maryland State Delegate from Baltimore who has opposed this facility. Sean, welcome. Good to talk to you.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me on. Hello to everyone else.
Liz Ryan's on by phone. She's President and CEO of the Campaign for Youth Justice. Liz, welcome.
Thanks, Mark.
And in the studio, Laura Furr, Senior Director of the Youth Justice Initiatives at Community Law in Action. And Laura, welcome.
Good afternoon. Thanks very much for having me.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. And we already have callers calling in. Leo, you're the first caller up, and we will get to you. But we want to lay this out, but please join Leo and become a part of this community discussion at 410-319-8888. All right. There was also a letter that we have a copy of that Governor Martin O'Malley responded to our last guest on this program. On this issue, Hathaway Farabee, who's executive director of Baltimore's Safe and Sound campaign, wrote a letter in opposing this jail, and then the governor responded in a almost six-page letter, to taking her points on one at a time, which we'll talk about as well in the course of this discussion. So we're at a critical moment. Sean Tarrant, let me just ask you this question first, since you're here from the legislature. If there was so much opposition in the state legislature to this, how come it never became a real issue when you were in session to find another way or to stop it or to say we don't want it or to say we do want it?
Well, I am just completing my freshman term, and one thing
you
that
are, that's true.
Learned quite quickly is when it comes to an issue like this, as far as being an initiative of an agency and the governor's supporting it, and it's the funding is a part of the overall budget where there are a lot of issues in there and you're trying to protect certain interests in your district, it doesn't bubble up as well, and it's not in an individual bill. If it was in a separate bill, we're talking about funding just for this alone, it was a standalone funding stream, then yes, then it would have been a much larger issue. You would have seen people actually vote against the building of a detention center for $104 million. But because it's in the overall budget, it kind of makes its way through. And that's the way the federal government does it. That's the way we do it as well, as far as a lot of big spending programs are part of the overall budget. And it doesn't get missed, but you can't vote against the budget and expect for us to be able to move forward and get other things done, and that's very unfortunate, but that's the way things kind of operate.
Let's begin by kind of talking some of the issues that came up in this letter. I think most people have been privy to and seen this letter at some point. It's not like a private letter, since the governor sends it out, it becomes very public after that. But one of the things that the Governor Martin O'Malley and whoever wrote this letter with him responded to was when Hathaway Ferriby suggested, and this is the quote, "The state should stop automatically charging youth as adults. In the short term and until the transfer laws can be revised, we recommend detaining youth charged as adults in a juvenile detention facility, a practice that is gradually expanding nationwide." And the governor kind of responded saying that that it doesn't work, that part of the reason is that older teenagers charged with first-degree murder, let's say, must stay in adult court. There's no choice around that. So let's talk about that. Laura, let me ask you speak to that, and then we're going to go right to Kristen Mahoney.
Great. Yeah, sure. So I just want to point out that 40% of the youth who are charged as adults initially get transferred back to the juvenile system, even in our current situation. And when those youth are transferred back to the juvenile system by a judge, they are housed in the juvenile detention facilities along with every other youth. There's no special protection. There's no special units for them. And so we're doing that now. So that concern I find to be a little bit lacking in its power to really convince anybody. And also, if we were to actually do this intentionally, we could put a separate unit in BCJJC or any of the other facilities. They all have very separate segregated units at the facilities, and so it would not be that difficult to keep the youth separated from all of the other youth in the facility and protected.
And Kristen Mahoney,
mm-hmm.
Go ahead, you can respond.
Well, we maintain, even as you stated, that the youth will fluctuate in and out of the adult and back down to the youth system, you still maintain about 90 kids that are currently housed at the adult facility at any given day. And, you know, I think that, you know, everybody kind of agrees that, you know, they're not charged for stealing bubble gum. These are people that have been charged with murder, robbery with deadly weapons. In fact, there's 10 kids charged with murder, 31 with robbery with deadly weapons, you know, and 21 charged with attempted murder. So, you know, there's a constant population that needs to be housed, and you know, there's not room for them at the juvenile detention facility because that is used by the juvenile court to house that group of children.
So, go ahead, Laura.
Well, just one of the things, if I may, is that one of the reasons why there's always this larger population of youth at the Baltimore City Detention Center is because of the extraordinarily long lengths of detention there. Pre-trial youth are held for 4 months to 5 months before their transfer hearings. So if we were to do that significantly faster, we would not have that large number of youth. And that's not even talking about before they get to a trial or a trial date even.
But the transfer hearings are not in the control of the state of Maryland.
Right. They're in the control of the courts.
Right.
Right.
So we are, you know, we're the hotel.
One way of saying it.
The hotel.
Right? And we're the hotel, and we have to manage the population to make sure correctional officers are safe and kids are safe and all the different levels of kids are safe, the deep end kids and the kids that are, you know, at first appearance at the juvenile detention facility.
And this has been Commissioner France's argument too. They only have to house the kids, and I agree. But you know, the courts need to also be looking at this issue as well.
So, Liz Ryan, let me ask you this question then. And since the state has to house them in their barred hotel, what do you say to that though? Because the reality is that Maryland has to get these kids out of the Baltimore City Detention Center.
I mean, my understanding is that the Federal Memorandum of Understanding says that these young people have to be separated from adults. We agree with that. We think that placing young people in adult jails alongside of adult inmates is a recipe for disaster. Now, the truth is the juvenile justice system in Maryland could safely house these kids, and not enough has been done by the administration to reduce the inappropriate and unnecessary detention of many kids. So we think that if the state really undertook a serious detention reform initiative and look at the length of stay of kids, who the population is, they could actually do this and do this right.
You're talking about young people who are now being held at the Baltimore City Juvenile Center.
I'm talking about both populations, right? There's things that the state can do to reduce the length of stay for kids in the adult system, and there are strategies that the state can undertake to reduce the length of stay of kids in the juvenile justice system, as well as make more use of detention alternatives, keeping kids who don't pose a risk to public safety out of the detention facility in the first place. Not enough has been done to look at that, and I think before the state intends to spend over $100 million on this, they really ought to explore these alternatives. And as far as I can see, the state has not done that.
This is, and Sean, I'm bringing you into this, but let me ask Kristen Mahoney. It seems to always come back to this, and I'm trying to find some new ways to kind of approach this hour, so we're not covering the same old ground. But it seems to me that the one of the biggest glitches in this conversation always is the numbers of young people who are held in the Baltimore City Juvenile Justice Center that advocates are arguing should not be there, and there should be different, there should be alternative programs for these young people to be either seen, held in, treated by, treated with, rather than housing them there. Then you could put in the most dangerous young people into those facilities as opposed to building a new jail.
Let me let
Kristen respond, then you can come right in, okay?
I think that the administration wholeheartedly supports that approach, and in fact, we have evidence to show that we have been deploying effective population management techniques, and we have been moving children back home into their communities at a rate far greater than anyone has ever worked on in the past, and that is because we've embraced the Casey Foundation's Juvenile Detention Alternatives Initiative, where we screen the individuals to ensure that they are in the least restrictive pre-adjudication placement. So this is going to open up those beds for the lower-end kids within the juvenile detention and juvenile system. And the other thing is that the detention center has expediters, as the governor noted in his letter, that go beyond what this Casey model says to do. They actually go on and look for kids that could be expedited and put it back into the community. And because of our work in this area, we now are in substantial compliance with the Department of Justice's findings. And so it's really important that we keep working on the JDAI model with Casey Foundation to continue to expedite and get the youth out of there that can be placed at home. If you start then switching over and moving the 17 and 18-year-old kids that are charged as adult, or 16 and 17-year-old kids that are charged as adult, to move back into that facility, it also has the potential to upset the balance that has enabled us to be in compliance with the Department of Justice findings. And I just want to go over one other piece, because people might feel that, you know, we're only building the juvenile facility and that's the one prong of our strategy, but in fact, you know, we have expanded our evidence-based practices, meaning those slots that are out in the community for functional family therapy. We've expanded it by 300%, and my office alone in the last month has invested $300,000 in alternative to detention programming just in Baltimore City. So this is a very multi-pronged approach that the jail is just one piece of it.
Sean, you were trying to say something.
Trying to say that, well, the reason why, you know, I decided to come on your show, and the reason why I'm not comfortable with this decision to build this new juvenile center, is that we need to do what's in the best interest of children. If you had a chance to talk to children and say, do we need to go out and build a detention center for kids who are acting up and have committed crimes? And they would say no, because they're in schools that are more antiquated than the jails and prisons that we're speaking about right now. We haven't had a new school built in Baltimore City since 1996, and that's Dr. Nathan A. Pitts Ashburton Elementary, which is in my legislative district. And so if we want to do what's right for children, we have to move children into alternative programs. And where do you find programs? Well, the thing is, we've got old middle schools and high schools that Dr. Andres Alonzo is putting in 2 to 4 schools within one school because it's too large. You've got a separate middle school in the inside of Western High School to try to beef up the population. All we need to do is take some of these older facilities and convert them into alternative programs for young people and take the majority of that money and put it into new programs for our schools, for our children. It's all about using the money wisely for our children, and we're not doing that. We're currently taking the money the state has and saying, here's a pot of money for the bad kids. Here's a pot of money for the good kids, and the good kids are losing out. We wouldn't raise our kids with a good pot and a bad pot. We just have one pot of money in our families to make our children better. We're not doing that on the state level. We haven't done it. It's something that we haven't discussed. And because Baltimore City has 76% of all the youth in the state that have been charged as adults and we have problems with, they're in the right place to be able to convert some of these schools to make sure that we can free up those slots and those facilities that can house these kids so that we don't continue to have that problem.
Let me open the phones here, and I want to raise the issue about I think what you're saying, Kristen, what you just said, Sean, makes a huge amount of sense for most people when they hear it. What you just said, Kristen Mahoney, about the shift, and that's what I was saying earlier, I think Governor O'Malley's administration has been making a larger shift than any administration previous to this, without a doubt. The question is, can it be bigger? And I want to go through what kids are in BCJC for and really wrestle with this question of, is an alternative way to deal with kids, the vast majority of whom in BCJC, from the stats that I've seen, are there for nonviolent offenses, even though many of them were for drug dealing and those were felonies. But, you know, a lot of really decent human beings on this planet have sold drugs before because they've had no other choice, and a lot of these kids are in there. Not saying it was a good choice, but let's talk about that. But let's open the phones first. Come right back to that before Kristen has to leave. 410-319-8888. Leo in Bolton Hill, you're on the air.
Yeah, good afternoon, Mark and friends. I'm not at all impressed with the initiatives coming from the governor's office. I mean, we can give pat him on the head and say he's a great liberal of some kind, but I'm looking at profiles of institutional racism. You call it a juvenile detention center. Well, it's a juvenile jail. You can dress that up and use the right language, but why aren't we taking pots of money to create jobs for our youth and our communities and targeting the inner cities to make that happen? Why are the youth works short of job monies available for our young people? It doesn't seem as though job creation and the development therein is a priority of this administration, because you never have enough money for job creation, but you seem to have an endless stream of monies for the construction of jails and the perpetuation of the corrections industry. And the corrections industry is a self-perpetuating bureaucracy of incarceration primarily for black people. I mean, if let me conclude on this note. If the governor can prioritize $50 million for the purchase of slot machines and all these other things that they're doing, then he can find additional monies. He can find monies to create job opportunities for people in the inner city, the youth in particular, and that is not a priority. I'm tired of the game that's being run by this administration. I'm not going to give him any plaudits whatsoever.
Okay.
Not at all.
All right, Leo. Anybody want to grab a hold of that one? Kristen, you're more than welcome to if you'd like to start.
Well, I know that job creation is a large priority of the governor's, and like I've said before, that these are youth that come to us in need of housing because the courts have told us that we must detain them. So these are not our children to house by choice, and I don't think anybody, I think everybody believes that, you know, we find ourselves in a terrible situation that we have to house them, but this is what we believe.
is best.
Let's talk about that for a minute, too. I mean, then we'll talk about the city justice and why kids are in there, what they're in there for. And but if it is true, I mean, the detention centers are there and the judges are the ones who put them there. Right. And then people always complain that judges don't put enough kids away. So but so these kids are in there because the judgment's in there. So is that part of the missing piece, Liz Ryan, of this conversation that we're not addressing what the courts are doing?
Well, there's a couple things here. I think to address that particular concern, I mean, the courts also determined that a large number of these kids don't belong in adult criminal court at all. Many of these kids are sent there because of the charges against them, but then when the adult court judges see their case, they decide, no, that child would be much better served in the juvenile justice system. So what's happening is that these kids are spending months and months and months sitting in the Baltimore jail when they could actually be in the juvenile justice system, and a lot of them get sent back to the juvenile justice system. So they don't need to be in the jail in the first place, and the administration could actually change that policy. They could do that right now. They could have these kids in a juvenile detention facility. They could also make better use of juvenile detention alternatives, and the truth is they're really not doing that. So it has to be a comprehensive look at this. It has to be a comprehensive solution here, and I think the caller is right on. The state is spending... They'll spend money on you if you get into trouble, but they won't help you get a job. Now, that's ridiculous. That's really backwards. And so, really, there ought to be much more upfront investment in young people to keep them out of the system in the first place, help nurture them, help them become successful adults. And that really ought to be the focus here, and that's really the governor's job in this effort. The governor does have a lot of control over all of these different policies, and the expectation is that there should be a comprehensive look and approach on this.
Well, let's just, and let me bring back here, Laura, for it. I mean, if in the governor's response to Hathaway Fairbury, the governor said today the juvenile that the use of evidence based practices has grown by more than 300%. Today, DJS, Department of Juvenile Services, has 324 available slots statewide for youth in an array of evidence based practices like multisystemic therapy (MST), functional family therapy, and multidimensional treatment foster care. We've covered all those programs individually on this show. And they do all work, and they do all are incredible, and we've met a lot of young people who have gone through those programs. But that's 324 kids.
Statewide.
Which is not a lot of kids.
No.
Given the number of kids that are arrested in our system. So the question is, how do we – was that – Sean, you trying to say something?
Yeah. I was trying to – you know, people – you know, so far I've heard just one caller and some other folks.
There's some other callers we've got to have to get to.
But, right. And the thing is, we can't look at it as a problem that solely the governor must solve. It's not up to solely Governor Martin O'Malley to solve this problem. This problem is multifaceted, and it comes from many different angles. And he's got to get good information. He's got to have people come with some real alternatives, but he's looking at the facts, and that's what he's basing it on. You know, I'm a huge supporter of the governor. I'll be honest with you. But the thing is, he needs more information. He needs real alternatives, and we need to try programs that we know can work and just expand the ones that are working, and we can do that. I do think we need to slow up, you know, what we're looking to do right now and see if we can implement some of these other things we can to help our children. Right now it costs $12,000 a year in public schools to educate our children, but it costs $28,000 a year to incarcerate them. That is just a pure fact that we are ignoring and not making our schools better when we can by using that money to improve our schools and make our kids want to go to school. I've been in our high schools. We have more than just four great high schools. I've been in Carver where they're doing other programs that they're teaching them trades, and these kids love to go to school because they know when they finish Carver, they're going to get a job. They're coming out as carpenters, electricians. So the thing is, we've got to do much more for our children, and we start with using the money that we were going to use it for to build a detention center and use it to build up our youth. Don't build up the prison system. Build up individual youth in our city, in our state, and that's how we solve the problem, and not just keep pointing the finger at the governor. He's only one person.
Okay, and I hope I wasn't pointing the finger at just one person. I'm trying to think of the larger issue here. But when I look at it, we'll go to Kristen Mahoney and then go over to Laura Furr before we go to break. And then we go, Clarence and Leslie, please hold on. You're the first two callers coming up next. I'm going to come right to your calls to Clarence and Leslie. Is that all right? You look at the young people being held now at the detention center. And I think if I'm wrong on these stats, you can correct me, Laura, because I mean you have them. But in this, in the city jail, young people being held as adults, 39% of them for armed robbery, 16 for first degree assault, 16 for attempted murder, 16% for attempted murder, 3% for first degree murder attempt, and on and on, 2% for carjacking, some violent crimes. They're there inside being held in the city detention center. But when you look at the city juvenile center, from what I understand, 26% are there on misdemeanors, like theft. 10% are there because of community detention, or blowing community detention. 9% are there because of status offenses, which some people say, like truancy and not being places, and we're saying you shouldn't be putting kids in jail for that. 4% are there for probation violations. That could be most anything. And 45% for felony cases, but most of those felony cases, from everything I've talked to and heard today from Laura and other people leading up to this show, are there for that. That means dealing drugs, not for like hitting somebody upside the head with a and doing something violent, but to dealing drugs. So the question is, shouldn't we be investing money, and how do you invest money in kids like that? To keep them in community or community detention as opposed to inside the jail, which would then free up that jail for all these young people who are committing armed robberies and murders. I mean, that's the disconnect I think people have and why we have a difficulty making that leap through our courts, the juvenile justice system, for all the things. And a lot of that does come under the governor's aegis, except for the courts. Kristen Mahoney?
Well, with regard to the community-based alternatives, and those youth that are still in the juvenile justice system, one of the things that your stats didn't go through, and I don't know if we can get this for you or not, is how many of those youth are in there for repeat. You know, is this their first offense, or have they been through the juvenile system several times? Because I know that they also use a risk-based assessment when making those detention decisions, and obviously at the end of the day, it again comes to a juvenile justice, a juvenile judge, to decide whether or not they're going to be detained. But with the kids in Baltimore City, we have a comprehensive network of spotlight on schools to work with kids in the schools to ensure that they are getting the treatment and therapy that they need while they're in the school, that they're going to school. And the city police and the Department of Juvenile Services have a really innovative program going on right now where they are attempting to divert the youth right at the district without even taking them down to the juvenile detention center. And that's being tested in one district, and, you know, it has the potential of going citywide. So we have opportunities to continue to work with the city to ensure less and less kids are detained and more kids can stay at home with the proper supervision and the proper protection for the community.
Outstanding. Outstanding. And that's the kind of program you need to expand. Our kids cannot be put in a situation where they become a part of going to prison. It becomes a rite of passage. But if they are diverted early on, then they can look to get back on track. So I'm glad to hear about that program.
And on the way to break, Laura.
I want to point out that I think the governor is getting a lot of this heat right now because we're trying to ask him to stop the facility and not because we think it's all his fault. You know, the courts do play a huge role in it, as do the police and the state's attorneys and everybody in the system. Just want to throw out a couple of numbers because numbers are my thing. $1,400 per youth is what we spend on a youth works position for a kid in the summer.
The jobs that we're missing 3,000 of right now.
Right, exactly. That there's 6,000 jobs this summer going on. It's $1,400 per youth. In Baltimore City, per pupil, we spend $16,000 a year, roughly $17,000 per year per pupil to educate our kids. If this new facility is built at the $8 million estimated that it's going to cost to actually operate it, this is once it's built, that's not even considering the construction costs, it's going to be $45,000 per bed per year to operate that facility. I mean, just that amount of money alone, if we considered what we could do with jobs, year-round amazing jobs for our youth, year-round amazing education for our youth, with that $45,000 a year that we're going to cost to incarcerate them or that we're going to spend to incarcerate them, just that alone is, I mean, that for me says, okay, just wait. Let's think about this for a minute before we go and do that.
That's not going to improve the conditions that the 90 kids are living in at the city jail right now.
No, absolutely. And trust me, I've been working at the city jail for 4 years. I have seen a guard squish a mouse's head with a broomstick in front of five kids' cells. I've seen the horrors at that facility. And I'm not saying they need to stay there. I'm just saying that there are better ways to spend that money and still get those kids out of that facility.
We have to take a very brief break and come right back. Clarence and Leslie, the first two callers up, will come right to your calls when we come back. Kristen, do you have to run? Is that what I understand?
Yes, I do. Thanks a lot for having me.
Thanks for being here. Kristen Mahoney, Executive Director of the Maryland Governor's Office of Crime Control and Prevention. We'll come back with Delegate Sean Tarrant, Laura Furr, Senior Director of the Youth Justice Initiatives at Community Law Center, the Community Law in Action, excuse me, and Liz Ryan, President and CEO of the Campaign for Youth Justice, who joins us from Washington, D.C. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Come right back to Clarence and Leslie. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, go to www.mecu.com. Do we need another juvenile facility built for $104 million in the city of Baltimore? Is there another way? Is it too late to stop it? We are joined by Sean Tarrant, Maryland State Delegate, who didn't want this in the first place, but has some interesting ideas about what we should be doing. Laura Furr, Senior Director of Youth Justice Initiatives at the Community Law in Action. And Liz Ryan, President and CEO of the Campaign for Youth Justice. The number here is 410-319-8888. Clarence in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Mr. Steiner.
Hi, Clarence. Welcome.
I'd like to ask a question or an opinion of you, which I respect. Do you get the sense that the reason that they want to build jails is because they really a certain segment in the governor's office and other people feel that there's a whole generation of individuals that are lost, that are beyond even bearing the expense of trying to save? I mean, you know, when you want to build a jail as opposed to putting forth an effort to redirect people to a better life, it would suggest that you've just given up on them.
Well, I think in many ways we have given up on these kids. I think there is that attitude. And I said before we went in the air, and I think Liz Ryan didn't hear this because you weren't in the room with us, but I'll let go to you. So I think that, you know, that there's either a very deep programmatic, philosophical, and pragmatic difference between advocates and people who run the institutions, or there's something just basic and innate in the politics and economics of criminal justice that doesn't allow for reform to take place. And whether what you're saying, Clarence, it has to do with people in the administration or people in power saying we've just given up on some of these kids, they've too far gone, we can't help them. I think there are people like that. And I think part of it has to do with the fact that many of these kids are African American, and now more and more Latino kids. Yet all the stats show us that that black youth are the least likely group of young people to do drugs in America. These are the ones filling up the jails. So I mean, there's a real disconnect here. So Liz Ryan, would you like to grab a hold of that one?
Yeah, absolutely. The caller's right in the sense that there's so many young people ending up in the adult criminal justice system and in the justice system generally. Too many young people of color. There needs to be much more political will to work with these young people prior to getting into the system and to ensuring if kids do get into trouble that the most effective and fair systems are put into place to help these young people turn their lives around. And I think that's what this debate is about. Up until a few weeks ago, the state, the legislature, and the governor weren't talking about this planned jail, which apparently had been underway for 5 years. So we're really glad that there's a debate going on now and that community members have a chance to really weigh in on this and really share their views and make sure that the concerns that people have about all of these young people ending up in the adult justice system gets discussed.
Let me go back to the phones unless somebody wants to jump in here. Sean, or let me go to the phones and you both can come right back in. 410-319-8888, because Leslie has been holding on for a long time. And Leslie, you're on the air.
Good evening, all.
Hi, Leslie.
I think the thing is that the state is programmed to build prisons. They already pre-programmed. That's part of the they process to provide public safety. But see, the problem really is the fact that, unlike most other races, black people tend to rely on society to educate and indoctrinate their children. See, and, you know, until black people decide they want to be responsible for their kids, like everybody else is responsible for their kids, then it'll always be like this. Because, see, the state is programmed to build prisons, and they don't care about how much more it costs to house a prisoner as opposed to educating an individual. See, because you got to remember, education is not a right. See, so now when you put that together, like, you got to be responsible for your own child. And see, the problem is black people have been conditioned over centuries to not take responsibility for their children. So they look to the government like and say, look, you need to give me a good school or something like this, because you can't take an individual that's absolutely corrupt and expect them to go into a classroom and perform on a level that's acceptable without the necessary tools. You know, but see, we as black people, we sit back and we complain about the fact that our children are the ones that get the worst deal in every respect. But then we don't make a personal commitment to provide for the education of our children, even if the government is not giving them a good one. And see, that's the problem. See, again, I just like to repeat one time.
Mm-hmm.
The government is pre-programmed to build prison, because it's an integral part of how this society has functioned for thousands of years, because we're only an extension of European society. So that's already pre-programmed. The thing that's not pre-programmed is that we, it's like I went off and educated myself sitting in jail, I might add, you know, and it wasn't the society didn't, it was up to me to accept the responsibility of being educated. Just like it's up to me to accept the responsibility of making sure that my children are not sitting around watching TV unsupervised and looking for every opportunity to pawn my children off on this occasion or that occasion or this event.
Well, listen, let me let some response come in, but you're saying some pretty powerful stuff. And Sean Saran, I heard you trying to get in there.
Yes.
Respond.
Thank you, Mr. Leslie. The one thing to know is that the state has two responsibilities. One is to balance the budget. The other one is to fund public schools. So it is the state's responsibility to adequately fund public schools, and that's all we do is adequately. We can do a much, much better job and make sure that we have better facilities for our children. As far as parenting, he's right. He's dead on. I feel like that's one of the silver bullets in society. If you have more fathers involved, you can cut the police force in half. I grew up in a neighborhood where the houses were too expensive to have single parents, so the dads were the police. You were more afraid of your father than any cop that could ever come and patrol our neighborhood. So yes, you're absolutely right on that part, and that's all I want to say. But thanks for your call.
But Leslie says, though, I think part of it is, and this is a topic for another show, we've done these conversations before and we have to come back to them, which is, you know, we always like to lay this thing about families at the doorstep of black folks. But what we're talking about here is what has happened to families in the dispossessed areas of urban poverty in America, be they black, white, Latino, or Native American. I mean, that's the problem. Families have been destroyed, and so there are no families in many ways. And I think, Sean, that's kind of what Leslie's putting his finger on, and we have, and until we come up with ways of putting people to work and putting families back together, it's going to be a hard nut to crack.
It's a hard nut to crack, but that's something that I have a daughter in high school, and she learns that in her health classes. And so
she's lucky she has one.
Right, she had lucky she doesn't have one, and you're absolutely right. But some of these things we've taken out of home ec. You know, people don't even cook for their families anymore. But a lot of these things can be done for children to rebuild us at the school where they're required to be on a daily basis. And he's right, and you're saying that we can rebuild our families, but it starts at home, it starts in our faith-based organizations, and it also starts in our schools as far as reinforcing that, and we've gotten away from that. But he's right on that point as well.
Go ahead. I'm going to get the facts to the phones here. But
I just want to add one little thing is that almost half of a youth that I did a survey on for a report that we're coming out in August live in neighborhoods that have 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 10 of the risk factors for the most disadvantaged neighborhoods. So we're not talking about kids that live in neighborhoods that have houses that are too expensive for a single family, a single parent family.
410-319-8888. Adrian, you're on the air.
First and foremost, I want to say thank you, Mr. Steiner, because you most definitely have the kind of shows that really have people engaged and listening to the topics that you bring up.
Thank you.
And I want to say hello to your panelists. I know Ms. Laura Furr. I tell you, she's about it. But when you think about this money that the city of Baltimore, the state of Maryland, is ready to spend in building a brand new facility for youth and for women, it's disheartening when you think about the fact that recreation centers are being closed, when you think about the fact that schools are being closed, teachers are being laid off, when you think about the fact that a variety of mentoring organizations have to apply for the same kind of funding and have to get the luck of the, whatever mentor organization has to, get the luck of the draw sometimes. And, you're wondering, like, is this a setup? Or is this something that, the government is targeting African-American youth, particularly with when you think of the numbers and the disproportionate amount of African-Americans in prison. But, one of the things that speaks volumes to me is that the government responds to what the people want, and it's unfortunate that you're only hearing what the people want. The only people that you're hearing about, that the only people that the government are hearing are the people who are more affected or victims of the crimes that a lot of youth commit. I'm wondering if there's a way that topics like this can be made available to the families of the juveniles who this new facility is going to affect, because they need to be heard.
Well, I think that what you're saying is important, Adrian. The problem is, I think, Liz Ryan, that many people were not aware this jail is going to be built, and now it's a fait accompli almost.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's moving on a fast track, but I still think that there is hope for stopping it. People should call the governor's office and ask him to stop working on this jail and find alternatives. Listeners can go to change.org and plug in Baltimore Jail, and a petition comes up, and they can send a letter to the governor, or they can call Alexis at the Safe and Sound Campaign, 410-625-7976, to find out how they can get involved, because we want to get the word out to people who are directly affected by this. We think that most young people, if asked, where would you spend $100 million? They're certainly not going to say it should be on a jail, and those young people's voices haven't been part of this debate at all.
So I want to ask Sean Turan a question on the way back to the phones here, but I just popped up change.org, www.change.org. Where's that petition on here?
Okay, when you get there, just plug in Baltimore Jail.
Oh, I see where it says search for.
Search for.
Okay, I just want to. We'll link to this on our site.
Great, thanks.
And let people who want to oppose it sign the petition. Sean, politically speaking, can this jail be stopped?
I don't know if it can be stopped politically, because we are in election year, let's be honest. And you don't want to appear sometimes as if the decision that you made, you've got to rethink it. When we've had so many problems in the past, the last governor has tried to work on this issue, and this governor has really tried to solve the problem. And this is what his people around him have come up with, this idea. I think that we can potentially delay it, but to derail it altogether, or maybe we can find some alternatives along with it. Maybe we can take a percentage of the dollars we're going to use and maybe reduce the amount we would use to build a new facility and divert to other areas. Maybe we can do that. But as far as just totally just stopping the program now, I think that would be very, very difficult to do. Hopefully we can slow it down, but I think it will be difficult. And that's just me taking a chance and sticking my own neck out there and saying that this is a re-election year for our governor, who deserves to be put to return back to the governor's house for the people. But it's difficult.
But don't you think that that if you're going to spend $100 million on something, you should really look at other alternatives? And, for example, the governor's analysis, the information that the governor's getting is seriously flawed. He's been given numbers based on 2007 data in terms of the size of this facility. And as far as I know, the Department of Corrections and other folks in the state haven't really looked at more relevant data. The numbers of kids in that facility has been going down. So why are they going to build something that's 2.5 times the size of the number of kids that are in the jail now? So it's really about fiscal stewardship. It's really about wise investment. And that's something I think the governor and state legislators really ought to think about. And I think that you and other members of the legislature should take a hard look at this and not just go along with it. It would really be a shame.
And let me just say, Hathaway Faraby just wrote in by email and said that the jail idea was started during the Ehrlich administration. And of course it can be stopped. There's always time to make a better decision, writes in Hathaway.
Well, she's not wrong in her email. So I'd like to see it stopped as well. That's why I'm on the show.
410-319-8888. Fran in Hunt Valley, you're on the air.
Good evening.
Good evening, Fran.
Once again, you have a very interesting forum of conversation.
Thank you.
You know, I can't help but think when I hear about all these monies that are being spent to house youths that need, obviously, to be reformed, that probably were led off the correct track by whatever entities that were involved, why many states in our country do not have some type of reform program to give them an entrepreneurial way of being productive in our society, to be financially literate. It seems to me, the things that I'm hearing, that a lot of these kids are where they are due to lack of money, due to lack of interest, or lack of self-worth, that they don't feel good about themselves. You know, the drug lifestyle is the way to go because that's all there is. I think the reform programs should be geared towards a broader perspective. This is, this isn't just all of the world, that you're in is this crime thing, because you can see where it leads. And I don't understand why our legislators or whoever is holding the bucks doesn't gear it in that way. I don't know if special interest is holding the money or somebody has something else, some hook in someplace. It just seems to me that that's the obvious solution, but nobody really comes to the plate and works on these things.
Well, it's interesting you say that. Any one of our guests can answer very quickly when I get back to the phones here and read this email. But as I was taking a walk this morning with my fiance, as we were talking about things, she said to me, the problem with this new jail and everything else is the power of developers and contractors. They want to make money. The state has it. So we build things so they can make money.
And let me point out that the architecture firm that designed this facility is in Virginia. So they'll even go to a Merrill contracting firm or architecture firm. We don't know who the contractor is going to be yet. But, yeah, I mean, that's $104 million in a contractor's pocket.
But those contractors might be able to have built new facilities that Sean Tarrant was talking about and refurbish our schools so kids who can be kept in the community and sent to places instead of being sent to prison can actually stay in the community, may become productive members of the community.
Right. The thing is, it's not a thing of this money would not go to creating jobs if we did something other than build this prison. This prison, we can even create even more jobs, and more money can be used if we were using it to renovate some of these schools to make them into alternative places for juveniles, as well as building up our own schools. So, I mean, the money can be used to create jobs and to spur the economy. It just doesn't have to be used to build a prison.
David writes into steinershow@gmail.com. He just wrote in, Baltimore needs a place dedicated to be responsible raising of youth by the community. Call it detention or anything else. If the youth who reside there are released without gaining a sense of well-being and responsibility, whatever you call the institution is a failure. So the question becomes, how much are we willing to pay for that failure? Keep in mind that punishment has never been an article of rehabilitation, and that any investment in our youth needs to outfit them for their authentic success. 410-319-8888 is the number here, and who's been holding on the longest? I'm trying to be fair here. Kenny, you're on the air.
Hey, just like some of the other callers, just you haven't really engaged the show. Thank you for your your topics. I want to share similar points of view that the gentleman Leslie expressed. I believe racism exists. I believe that there are people that do underhanded things, and those things are part of what has been going on for some time. What we have to do for those people who are looking to circumvent, thwart, or stop is develop a stronger will. And I'm not even having an either-or conversation. Mm-hmm. I think the panelists that are on the show, it's important for them to lobby and protest in the way that they're doing it. But for the people, by the people, have to begin to stand up and have some kind of will. There are children who are walking around with $200 phones, $200 shoes. They don't have computers. They're not reading books. Parenting is at an all-time low. And if we want to let them know that they've wasted their money, let them build the jails and we just keep it empty. Parents have to begin to step up. And I understand all the statistics. I worked for Baltimore City Public School System as a teacher, and I'm not oblivious to the issue. As a matter of fact, one of your panelists was talking about the statistics of youth that are at risk. Adults are at risk. If you smoke too much, you're at risk. If you eat the inappropriate diet, you're at risk. If you don't get the proper sleep, so everyone's at risk if they're not developing a strong inner will.
Okay.
To do the things that's going to benefit themselves. And what I'm saying is parents and communities have to begin to stand up like they did of old. And I'm relatively young. And I just think we're sitting down and we're allowing...
We're almost out of time. So I really appreciate what you had to say, and I think what you had to say was important. And I think that one of the keys to stable families in this world is jobs. People who work, whether they're breaking their back, and this may sound silly, picking cotton, or whether they were doing brain surgery, people who have work raise strong families. That's part of the problem that we face. We have a world that where dislocation has taken over and work has gone away and families are not there, whether you're separated, divorced, or fully intact. And I wish we had more time. It was 1 minute. So Karen in Silver Spring and William in Mount Washington and Mac, wherever you're calling from, we can't get to those calls. But I do want to encourage you that if you think the jail should stop, you can go to the website change.org and just write in Baltimore Jail, and there's a petition there you can read. If you agree with it, you can join the all the folks who have signed that letter and get that out there. And so I want to thank all of our guests, Liz Ryan, President and CEO of Campaign for Youth Justice, Laura Furr, Senior Director of Youth Justice Initiatives at Community Law in Action, Sean Tarrant, Maryland State Delegate. Thank you all so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to have you all here. And I thank, of course, Krista Mahoney from the governor's office, who joined us earlier in this program. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Marlene and Stuart Greenebaum Cancer Center, an NCI-designated cancer center providing research, treatment, and education to further the prevention of and cure of cancer. Online at www.umgcc.org. Well, the number for information is 1-800-888-8823. We take a very brief break. Come back. Hear about how you can keep your family stable for just a few minutes, and then talk about President Obama's speech on immigration. Stay with us. We'll be back.